I got up at like 5:45 this morning to work on my little writing project.
Yeah, how's that going?
You know, like writing projects go, I wish I was a little bit further along, but I feel really motivated to get it done. So hopefully I'll continue to find this like really great schedule of getting up early and not being distracted by small people and get some good writing finished.
Seemed to work so far today. And that is your ebook on raising entrepreneurial kids. Is that right?
Yep, that's the one.
So if you're listening and you're interested in perhaps hearing, it's some of our combined thoughts from stuff we've talked about in the past, as well as a lot of your new thoughts that you're putting down. Folks can come to zenfounder.com, enter your email address, and you'll definitely be the first to hear about it. Although the first to hear about it, aside from our patrons, folks who support Zen Founder with a patron pledge, they of course receive free copies of the stuff we produce. So that's at supportzenfounder.com. If you get value out of the show, we'd appreciate a pledge. But also buying the ebooks and such that we produce also helps support the show.
And it makes me not feel so bad about the world.
Why do you feel bad about the world?
I'm just kidding. It's just an ego stroke.
You're just trolling everyone.
please love me. Please buy my book, please.
And leave iTunes reviews while you're at it.
Oh my God. Okay. Let's like actually do something with this episode.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Walling.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other will both get value from the episode. Today, I wanted to dive in to talk a little bit about something we've never talked about on the show in depth, but it's surprising because of how much of an expert you are on this topic. But it's talking about therapy and basically, you know, what it looks like to go to therapy, what happens in therapy, how do you know you have a good therapist, the difference between therapy and coaching or consulting, because you do both and they are in fact different things. So, you know, given that you are a trained clinical psychologist with a PhD and master's in psychology, and you know, you've been practicing now for how long?
I became licensed in 2008, but that was after 5 years of intensive practice under supervision.
Right. So you kind of started as a trainee in 2003. So you have quite a bit of experience under your belt at this point. You know, I remember growing up, and let's say in the 80s, people would talk about going to a psychologist, a shrink, they would call them. And there was just a really negative perception of it. I think maybe that you were weak or that something was wrong with you if you went to therapy. I feel like that, at least in the circles I run in, has completely changed. And there isn't as much of a stigma, but I do imagine that there's some folks listening to this who might think, I would never go to therapy. I'm not having like major clinical issues, or I'm not majorly depressed, or I'm not, you know, on the brink of divorce. So I think that's kind of the first start, is like, why do people and why should people perhaps consider going to therapy?
You know, I think I have like a little bit of a mission in the founder community to really normalize the experience of going to therapy. And I'm very utilitarian about it in the sense that you have someone else cut your hair, you have a dentist that takes care of your teeth, you have these experts that you go to because they have a skill, a way of seeing the world, a level of training in a particular topic that you don't have. And I would sort of make the argument that therapy is like that, that there are those of us who have specialized training in emotional life and inner life in relationships, and whether or not there's this sort of acute, egregious problem, it can be really helpful to get in the room with an expert and just sort of talk through some different aspects of your life and see what could be improved or what blind spots you might have. So I would make the case that going to therapy is part of like preventative health and something that should be sort of normative and common. Unfortunately, though, I think many people go to therapy when, like you say, they're no longer functional at work. They are missing work and not able to do like the tasks of their job, or they're on the brink of some kind of personal crisis or of the loss of an important relationship. But that certainly is not the only way to use therapy well.
Right, right. Yeah, you don't need to be on the brink of something. That was a thing I noticed when you were getting your master's, that a lot of your cohort, I think it was actually a requirement as you went through and were getting trained, that you had to go to therapy for 6 months or a year. And that I remember really it becoming really normative as we were hanging around with those folks, and people, because I was like, well, what do you talk about if you don't have anything wrong with you? You know, but that wasn't the thing. It's like, we all have something wrong with us, right? We all can use that sounding board of another person who's trained in helping people get unstuck. All of us have some sticking points, right? And have something that we're dealing with at any given time in our life, even if it's not some major bout of depression or something like that.
Yeah, I think in a perfect world, I would recommend that every founder establish a relationship with a therapist and go for a couple of months, get grounded, get connected, understand how they work, let them understand you, and then just have that person in your, you know, your Rolodex, so to speak, that you have this established relationship. And when you need them, when you reach a point of crisis or when things start to fall apart or not go well, then you already have a person to go to. You already have that contact and that relationship established.
Okay. So I feel like my next question is like, you know, what happens from your perspective, what happens in therapy?
That's a giant question. You know, on one level, it is something that rewrites the structure of your brain. So like there's a lot happening on sort of a cellular level all the way to an emotional experience. On a very practical level though, usually therapy involves a kind of getting to know you session or two where the therapist may lead with a lot of questions and sort of understand your history, what stressors you're experiencing, what has led you to come to therapy at this time. And then for most modes of therapy, there's some open space of your ability as the client to really talk through anything. And the therapist's job is to help make connections between past and present, between your thoughts and your feelings. What they're actually doing in the room depends a little bit on their orientation to therapy and the, you know, the kinds of like the model that they're working from in terms of what they believe is helpful to people or not. So no two therapists practice exactly alike, but in general, there's this sort of model of a safe, confidential, highly legally protected place to talk to a trained, very astute listener.
And why is that helpful? You know, you've mentioned two things. One, astute listener. Two, someone who is professionally trained to make connections between thoughts, feelings, and experiences. Why are those helpful for someone who, again, may not feel like they're necessarily struggling with a lot of stuff all the time?
I feel like there's lots of answers I want to give. On one hand, the process is about helping someone cultivate their own capacity for self-reflection. So therapy is an experience that helps someone learn how to have an examined life, an intentional life. And I think that that's very important for health. I think it's very important for business, so that when you are reacting to a client or one member of your team in a particular way, you understand where that reaction comes from. You understand the ways that they remind you of your father and make you feel inferior or something. I think it's a really important thing to be someone of internal depth who has the capacity for self-understanding. So that's sort of the larger philosophical level. More practically, I think many of us are really hungry for listening connection, where we can speak without fear of judgment, where we can kind of tell our story, where we can be authentic about who we are with someone who is genuinely interested in helping us be the best version of ourselves. Therapy isn't advice giving. I don't tell my patients what to do. Honestly, I try to help them connect to what they already intuitively somewhere in the depths of themselves know is what's best for them. And that happens through listening. It happens through a process. It happens through vulnerability and some patience.
And so, I mean, there might be folks listening to this who had never even considered going to therapy because, again, they don't have, or they may not have a dire need or something specific that they're thinking about. Do you feel like everyone at some point in their lives should try it out? Or like what school of thought? I've heard different opinions on this. Certain folks say everyone should be in therapy and other people say everyone should try therapy at least once. And there's just a lot of different schools of thought. How do you feel about that?
I'm probably more of the therapy as part of personal growth school of thought. A more traditional kind of insurance-based medical model would say you have no business in a therapy room unless you have a diagnosable mental illness. So there's definitely a variety of perspectives. Again, I would lean toward therapy as something that helps promote growth and insight and maturity. And I think folks who are also really, really struggling to function well given the demands of their lives or the workings of their brain, then absolutely, therapy is a life-saving tool for some people.
And so, you know, if someone wants to maybe dip their toe in the water, how do you go about looking for a therapist? Like, where do you start? Do you just go to Google? You go to the yellow page? No, wait, is it white page? I don't even remember which one.
Do those exist?
I think it's the yellow
anymore?
Pages. I know, that's right. They always go straight to the recycle bin when they arrive here. So, I mean, is that it? Do you go to Google? Is there like a website where you know a lot of therapists kind of hang out their shingle, so to speak?
Well, there's several different options. I think Psychology Today is a pretty reputable national website. And it's just a place for individual clinicians to go on and sort of put their information and talk about what their interests are. And you can find out if they take your insurance and where their office is located and those kinds of things. And so that's a great option if you're searching locally according to your address. And there are, you know, Therapist Finder and other things like that. I think word of mouth is also a great strategy. So talking with people about who they've seen. If you have a psychologist friend in your life, asking for a recommendation. You know, I think, unfortunately, like all professional enterprises, there's a lot of really wonderful, good clinicians, and then there's a handful of really crappy ones. So you want to make sure that you are with someone who is licensed, who is trained at a reputable school, who has a good amount of experience. But most of all, you want to work with somebody who you like, who is interesting to sit with, who you feel listens well and understands you, who you feel some kind of connection with.
Yeah, I think that's a big deal for people to think about is like you should perhaps interview multiple, right? If the first person doesn't necessarily jive with how you're feeling, it's not like you're committed. It's like if you were to go look for a doctor or, you know, some other professional service person, you want to know, you know, you're going to be sitting with them and talking about a lot of things. And so if you don't necessarily see eye to eye or you don't feel like there's a connection there, I would imagine you should check out multiple before you kind of take the plunge and agree to start seeing somebody.
And a lot of people will do a free initial consult, or they'll at least do like a 15-minute consult by phone. So you can get a sense of someone and whether it's worth your time to go and see them.
Right. So how do you know if you have a good therapist then?
In the formal clinical world, we talk about having a strong working alliance. And that's, you know, fancy speak for just like feeling a good connection, feeling like your goals and their goals are aligned, feeling like there's a level of sort of emotional connection, like they understand you and you find them to be safe and comfortable to talk with. And I think you want someone who has the right balance of challenging you versus being empathetic, of giving you homework or pressing your buttons versus, you know, someone who is letting you shape the experience of treatment. It's sort of about style. Some therapists are very direct. They're very kind of upfront. Others are much more laid back or allow a lot of silence. And it's a little bit tricky because you don't always want to choose what's most comfortable. Sometimes you want to choose what you most need. So if you're uncomfortable with silence, I might suggest you like find a therapist who uses a lot of silence and sort of go and work that out and try to figure out why it's not comfortable for you to have open space and conversation. But I think you have a good therapist if you feel yourself growing, like if you begin to feel different, if you begin to feel more insightful about your life, and if you begin to feel a little bit more kind of comfortable in your own skin and in your own experience.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So let's talk about the difference then between therapy, which, you know, again, you had a in-person private practice in Fresno where you worked with a group of other clinicians and you saw folks who had experienced trauma and who were dealing with all types of different stuff. And then you have also done what is essentially, you know, we call consulting work. And this is tends to be more, it's remote and it's via video chat. And you're essentially consulting with founders or founders and their spouses or founders and their co-founders who are struggling with one thing or another, whether it's relationship-based or whether it's anxiety-based or whether it's just things that they're trying to overcome. How do you view this difference? You know, because there's obviously a legal difference between the therapy and the consulting. I mean, in the sense that you have to be licensed to do therapy. So maybe talk about that, like, I guess, where the like legal boundary is, as well as maybe your perception, you know, of how the non-legal difference between therapy and like the founder consulting that you've been doing here for the past year or two.
So they're separate but related activities. When I am working under sort of the mantle of a psychologist, it's a legally protected, sort of very formal relationship. And my job is first to make a diagnosis, to sort of understand essentially what's wrong, to figure out whether it's a traditional medical diagnosis or a theoretical diagnosis, to sort of identify the problem for someone. And therapy, at least in the way that I practice it, it's a heavy kind of responsibility of caretaking, where I'm the doctor and my job is to figure out what's wrong and help make it better. It is collaborative in that I work very closely sort of in partnership with my clients, but it has a different dynamic. And there are all these sort of legal requirements about what you can do, what can't do. And the primary way that the relationship is set up is that there is a helper and there is someone who is being helped. And I would say that usually that relationship is deeper and more intense. So we'll work with people for years if needed and talk with them about, you know, the details of a sexual assault they experienced when they were a teenager. And there's a lot of depth and intimacy and connection that goes along with that helping relationship. So in contrast, I think when I'm working as a consultant, I'm not so much concerned with diagnosis. I feel like usually folks who seek me out have a specific problem or a feeling or something that has driven them to contact me. And I don't have to spend a lot of time trying to kind of identify what the problem is. They usually do that for me. So usually the relationship is set up to be shorter term, maybe less emotionally connected, but still with that sense of listening and supporting and helping. It's often geared more towards optimizing health rather than treating mental illness. So the kind of the goals are a little bit different and the level of need or intensity is different.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think you touched on it in there, but there's kind of tends to be a more short-term versus long-term bent as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think the way that I really like to do consulting is to sort of meet weekly for 3 to 5 weeks and really get a foundational understanding of who someone is and what they're needing. And then from there, you know, I might meet monthly or just as needed. And so it's like you're kind of your person on call. Whereas when I'm doing therapy, often I do meet weekly with people because I'm monitoring something or I kind of have a watchful caretaking eye. I think also, at least for me, consulting is a little bit more of an egalitarian relationship. Most of the folks who come and do consulting with me have listened to the podcast. They sort of know a lot about me. They know about our family. Versus in therapy, I try to maintain some level of separateness between my professional and personal identities. That's much more integrated in consulting. That said, most therapists work with people all over the spectrum in terms of health and illness. And so because I am both a consultant and a therapist, I have to be sort of clear about which role I'm playing at any given time. So I parse them out and maybe exaggerate the separateness so that I'm clear in my head what I'm doing. But I just do want to sort of sing that song over and over that I think working with a mental health professional, whether they're a consultant or whether they're a therapist, is a really, really valuable experience. And maybe Rob, you can speak to that a little bit. You've been in therapy, even though you have the most fabulous wife. Apparently I can't fix and support you in everything. So what was your experience in therapy like as a founder?
Well, yeah, I mean, this was in the early days, right? This is 2007. We lived in New Haven, and I was making the transition from consulting to products. And there's just a lot of ups and downs, mostly downs. And it was struggling to get enough time to work on it. I was very frustrated. I was tired of consulting. You know, we had young child, like a one-year-old, and you were in your residency at Yale at the time. And so it was just it was a hard time. And you know, we were both trying to hustle. I mean, I was doing my 40 hours a week consulting and trying to do 10, 20 hours a week on the side. And your residency was competitive and you were doing 50, 60 hour weeks. And we had the young kid. So all that to say, like, you and I only had so much time together and you only had so much capacity to sit and listen to and absorb what I was trying to think through. And I mean, I think both of us that year, you know, didn't necessarily have a lot of headspace to help the other out in a way that we needed. And frankly, might not even be healthy to do that. I mean, I spent an hour a week talking to, like you said, a trained professional who's used to hearing people and reflecting things back. And it's like, how fair would that have been, you know, to sit there and talk to you for an hour straight every week after all, you know, everything we were trying to get done that year? That's when I realized, like, huh, these relationships with our friends and our spouses, they are supportive, loving relationships. But, you know, a lot of times it's like they're not the best place to really process something that's going to take tens of hours, hundreds of hours to process. It's just not fair to that other person. So for me, therapy, I think it was maybe 5-6 months. I don't recall how long it was, but it was kind of dealing with, A, I was dealing with my first harsh winter, right? And B, really dealing with the transition over to product. And so she just helped me think through the angles, think through what I was going through, help give me a sanity check on a lot of fronts. And yeah, it's pretty much what you've described. You know, it's just, it's not magic. It's not like in Goodwill Hunting where you suddenly have this breakthrough and they say it's not your fault and then you cry and you're cured. It's like thinking through something with another intelligent person who is just a third party and is removed from the thing. So it's not loaded. That was the thing, right? If you and I got into a conversation, I would say, I'm so frustrated that I don't have time to work on my products. And then instantly, it's like you could feel defensive pretty quickly about that. Whereas the therapist she didn't have any skin in this game other than to hear me out and say, okay, what are you actually getting enough time? Why do you think you need more time? What would more time look like? How, you know, just really talk through some stuff to give me some strategies and tactics for kind of approaching that with you and dealing with that even in my own day-to-day life, how I could fix it myself without necessarily causing conflict between us.
Yeah, I think that's really important to point out is that deciding to go to therapy or talk with a mental health professional is not because your spouse isn't loving enough or, you know, your team isn't supportive enough. It really is not a failure of your support network. I think sometimes it's a really helpful, healthy thing to do for your loved ones because you're taking like some responsibility for working through your own burdens in a way that doesn't put a lot of undue burden on another person. And I think you're absolutely right. At that point in our lives, we both weren't getting what we needed and we needed help to feel like we were well enough to really be supportive to each other. And that was a perfect time in our lives for us to both be in therapy. So mental health professionals are not scary, I promise. And if you meet a scary one, just leave and go find somebody else. And, you know, it can be an incredible resource, I think, for your own well-being and the well-being of your business if you are really proactive and about taking care of yourself and your inner life.
And if you have other questions and whether, you know, they're questions about therapy, about how to find a therapist, or, you know, about stuff that Sherry does and the consulting that she offers, you can always ping her at sherry@sherrywalling.com. That's Sherry spelled like the wine.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.